Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamfler and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review Raw, but also SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Hamfler and Sidgwick. And gents, quite the come down from Sunday night, this show.
It's rubbish, man. It's so boring. It's so boring. It's so flat. If you stack up the rosters against one another, the greatest thing Vince McMahon ever did was get born earlier. Born earlier than Tony Khan. Their market visibility, their reach, their ability to somehow not hemorrhage the entire audience is literally the only thing they have going over AEW, is their history, their established market presence, because in terms of star power, quality, buzz, audience belief, excitement, there is no comparison between these two products. And I'm sorry, we are a mainstream wrestling outlet. We don't cover the likes of Dragon Gate, Noah, and the like. It's just what we do. We're a mainstream news outlet. As it so happens, we cover AEW and WWE primarily. Mm. It's becoming impossible to watch one promotion in the immediate wake of another. This has been the case almost since AEW's inception. By the way, I wrote a goddamn article before AEW formed, but just as AEW formed, saying the secret myth about WWE's competition. Everyone's going, oh, it's going to be great, this, for competition. It's not 1996 anymore. They're not going to do anything. The structure isn't in place. Vince McMahon's completely lost it. People are saying, oh, how do you think WWE's going to respond? They're not going to. They're incapable of responding. And what you get is just a drab, drab, boring Raw. The lean on the old tricks. Oh, Kofi Kingston gets a reaction, and he's a machine. All right, he can go now. Oh, great. I haven't seen these. Seriously, on the back of last night's performance, in addition, it was 2019 run, in terms of how long he's been there, how many WWE hours of television have been accrued since Kofi Kingston was there. Has he been in the ring longer than any other WWE performer ever?
I mean, it's got to be way up there. It's got to be way up there, isn't it? If you think just about singles matches with Dolph Ziggler, if you don't even count these gauntlets, it's got to be way up there. We've got to start with the comparison of this of all episodes. We have to start with the comparison. You remember when sort of New Japan was peaking around, I would say like 2015, 16. And I say that from like lived in experience, because it was when I had no choice, but it's like look over there and see what was going on. And like there was and I will like admit to being part of this. This kind of like belief in like the American wrestling audience that it was just simply too hard to get into. Or like when Lucha Underground was making some genuine headlines for doing things differently. And it was like breaking a lot of the established rules of how wrestling should look. Or Final Deletion, even Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy's first one. I was like, this is just not what we've seen from wrestling before. And how can we like adjust our thinking a little bit to see it for all its amazing benefits? That's like coming to Raw after All Out 2021. Like, I genuinely don't think that's exactly, to be honest, that's like coming to Raw most weeks after Dark Elevation at this point. But especially after All Out last night, like JR and Excalibur, like and Tony Schiavone, just line after line after line of making it clear. But one is where pro wrestling lives now. and the other is whatever this wants to call itself. I don't even know what you call this. Like, this isn't sports entertainment. Like, it's been a dirty, sports entertainment's like this filthy phrase over the last, like, 30, 40 years. But guess who's got two thumbs and like sports entertainment? This guy. I didn't like Raw. Like, I never liked Raw. And this wasn't even the worst of Raw's. I've had 2 weeks off watching Raw. I don't think this was the worst episode of this year by a long chalk. It was impossible to emotionally invest in it. Impossible.
I said this wasn't, still a line from old Roman Reigns, this wasn't a good episode of Raw. This wasn't a bad episode of Raw. This was an episode of Raw. It was just there. I mean, I'm not sure if you guys are aware, Vince McMahon was not backstage for this show. He was at home, obviously still pulling the strings. Bruce was in charge, which is probably why we got so much bloody tag team wrestling on this show.
This is a Paul Heyman special episode of Raw this. Guess what? That wasn't any good either.
Mm. It's just speaking of this, a friend of ours came round last night, a wrestling fan, and she had heard or seen all this buzz online about Adam Cole, about Bryan Danielson, et cetera, and all about AEW off the back of All Out Naturally. And she was chatting about it. And, you know, we talk about getting casuals into it. And I said, I'll show you something from last night. Because she said to the line, she said to me was, so is AEW not like PG WWE? Like, not as in not a PG version of WWE, but with a PG product that WWE produces. So I put the cage match on for her.
No.
And she pretty rapidly realized, no, it just does mint stuff and has great matches. And yeah, maybe pushes the boundaries for certain things, but yeah, it is night and day when you come. I realize I'm comparing a pay-per-view to a weekly TV show, but you could compare the weekly TV show to this weekly TV show and it'd still be night and day. Anyway, let's talk about this show because we've got tag team turmoil to get into. The show started with little video packages of each person cutting a promo about how they're going to win tag team turmoil and be the ones to face RK-Bro going forward. Nice nod from Xavier Woods at the beginning saying, it's tag team turmoil, baby. Lovely that. They said they're going to win because New Day rocks. Viking Raiders are going to raid the entire division tonight. Mansoor's very giddy. Mustafa Ali tries to calm him down, just says, follow his lead, Lucha House Party. Say it's Lucha time. And
Mace, the team boss says you're going to be six more victims tonight. That's what's happening.
Jinder Mahal and Via.
Von Oprah's vagina from South Park again on Mason T-Bar. Say, nobody move.
Via says something and Jinder translates saying that means they're going to be the next tag team champions. And AJ Styles says, oh, Spunky Brain himself. They're being in charge of nothing. They can't do nothing, them dude boys. They're going to take the titles back, basically. Anyway, how comes RK-Bro? They do a video package. Of course they do. It's Monday Night Raw. But they've got to fill some time. Recapping what happened last week. And Orton says, Bobby Lashley and MVP lost because Lashley's a greedy son of a bitch. And he's going to find out tonight who's going to lose to RK-Bro next. And Riddle does some comedy running over the teams and saying, Randy, here's the thing we should steal. I like going on raids and lucha stuff, drink ale. And Orton looks like he just despises him. But it's a great little story to be told. And he puts Orton over saying he has never had a carb in his life. Anyway, out comes Lashley and MVP. MVP tells Riddle to shut up. And Orton goes, hey, no, only I get to do that, basically. Lashley says he wants to rip Orton's head off for giving him an RKO last week. He calls him a coward, challenges him to a singles match. And Orton says, yeah, all right, I'll do that. If you put your title on the line, the crowd loves it and MVP accepts. But at Extreme Rules, Lashley said, you know what? I am a greedy son of a bitch. And he was going to speak to Postman Pierce and Sonya Deville so they could be added to this tag team turmoil match and he could still become a New Day champion, double champion, sorry. I mentioned the New Day because they come out next and Byron Saxton says, my heart just turned into a smiley face emoji and I already get very sad and long for All Out 2021. Casey gets on the mic now and says, well, you better hurry up because they're about to start right now. And Woods reminds them that, you know, I beat Lashley a few weeks ago. And we're about to become tag team champions once again. Effectively, a different version of a promo train to start this week off, Sitch.
Aye, it's a long train. Bloody long train, including the pre-tapes and everything else. Look, they didn't have to do this. All they had to do was tell you there's going to be a tag team turmoil match. Fine. Then maybe do the angle. I don't know. This is also all over the goddamn place. A lot of talking. They're trying to build your Extreme Rules title match around the goddamn time sink of a gauntlet or a turmoil or whatever the hell it is. So that was irritating. Two things popped me, you know, during this. Two things. AJ Styles saying that you wouldn't put Riddle in charge of a vending machine. Good line. Good line, because of course you don't need to man a vending machine. It's automatic. So that was good. You know what, Riddle, like, he's got something about him. This act has got something about it, and the Snake and Stallion Express, like an actually good visual gag of that tit Riddle wearing one of those comedy horse masks wasn't a bad thing to think about. It's the nicest thing I can possibly say.
Yeah. I mean, like, let's get out of the way now. Kofi Kingston's gear was the best thing on the whole show. Like, it hadn't crossed my mind that there needed to be a Kevin Nash to Xavier Woods' Scott Hall at SummerSlam. I assumed it to be this one-note joke because they had to do a water pistol advert and he was soaking wet, oozing machismo from that super drip stick he had. So it never crossed my mind that we'd get Big Kofi Cool, and we got him. That was great. I just needed to say that because, like, it's not relative to anything. It's yet more worshipping of the past. I just thought it looked really nice and allowed Kevin Nash to do that amazing tweet where he said it was nice to see somebody moving in that gear. Like, what a legend. What an absolute legend. I didn't mind this because it was not all of it was good, but it was like an explosion of events. There was a lot of events here, like all the teams were given a minute or whatever to say, yeah, it was a promo train, it like presented differently, but it was all a little bit of like minuscule character development for them all, why they wanted to win, even if most of the characters are terrible, even if there's not really any stories attached. It was that at a bare minimum. Orton, as a guy intelligent enough to think, hang on, I've got some leverage here, I'll take a singles title shot, thanks very much. And Bobby Lashley being willing to stand up to that. Like, I don't know how WWE do this, because we've talked about this in the podcast before. Sometimes they, like, make you look over there and then suddenly have you interested in a Randy Orton title match. And it's only once, and you never bothered about the rematches, and then you realise... Like, even within the match itself, you sort of start losing interest. It's like, oh, he's hit the chin lock. Yeah, I'm bored with this now. But somehow, at the first mention of it, they tend to kind of like get you on the hook again. I thought that was pretty effective. I just like that character sort of using this opportunity for his own gains. And again, like, you might have to fill in some blanks for me, because it won't surprise you to know that I've not really kept up with the antics of Monday Night Raw, with one glaring red masked exception that I'm looking forward to getting to later on the show. I've not really had to pay attention to the Monday Night Raw superstars. Folding in RK-Bro into the title picture is kind of inspired. Drew McIntyre can't challenge for it. There's nobody else feeling remotely ready. Goldberg's going to get his ugly Saudi Arabia rematch then. So why not?
Not for the title, though.
Well, all right, okay. Well, so I just assume that would be for the belt again. So the
no, he doesn't want it. He doesn't want the belt.
He doesn't want the belt. He just wants the money. He just wants the blood.
Soul out of his body, I think he said.
He wants to rip his soul out of his body on behalf of his kid.
Well, he's going to the right country for it then. But like the tag as evidence in at SummerSlam and in the weeks leading up to it, RK-Bro the hottest thing on the show. So acknowledge that and put them in the title picture as well. Like, this is the best use of all the people here. Really didn't mind.
The box is up for Randy.
Yeah,
and instigate the split that way, maybe. Yeah. You know, the ramifications. This is the bare minimum of what we talk about. Oh, there's a storyline development here. Great.
I don't know why we bother.
It's a show.
I don't know why we bother with the preview sometimes. I mean, it's good because you just take the piss out of it, basically.
Me neither.
But me and Ben Roy yesterday were talking about this, and we were talking about, have they forgotten about Bobby Lashley? Like, he hasn't got anyone to face at Extreme Rules. We're, what, 3 weeks away? And I was saying, literally just put anyone in a title shot, because we all know he's retaining and he's going to go and face Goldberg, even though it's non-title at Saudi Arabia. And it also makes no sense that we pitch winners for these things, because Ben Roy picked the Viking Raiders for Tag Team Turmoil. And I think I picked, in a shock victory, Mansoor and Mustafa Ali for them to eventually disintegrate. So, oh, that was it. It was going to be... I think maybe Mason T-Ball was going to cost the Viking Raiders, so you can have another storyline going on in the tag team division. That's far too far, you know, away. But you have Mansoor and Mustafa Ali although it doesn't work because they're going to go Saudi Arabia, so they need to keep them together. And I was going to have them split, and basically Riddle go like, can you imagine someone turning on their tag team partner like that? But what's the point? Because they're just hoying a bloody world champion into the tag team mix at the last minute anyway, and get rid of the other promised title match that they said was going to happen on this show. Well, it's going to be the women's tag titles on the line, and then it just went, ah, no, bollocks, change it, just make it a contenders match.
Are you mourning that?
No.
I mean, Natalya is involved. So don't act in good faith like your brothers
will. I feel a bit bad for Shotzi and Knox, who've beaten the tag champs about five times. It's not a title shot, but still. Anyway, Kofi and...
Some WWE praise, because we never have any. And I just think there's been a bit of this lately. It doesn't happen often, and it doesn't happen with everybody, and it should. And Sidgwick's always right. It's bare minimum. It's bare minimum. There have been a number of cases, I think, over the last month, 2 months, where wrestlers are being permitted to get involved and in the mix with what other wrestlers are doing outside of their own feud. And I don't know who's been the one to drive that, and I really like it. There's more of that here, and I just think it really, really helps, because WWE is so goddamn basic that when you just let one character like exist in somebody else's orbit for 5 minutes, it makes it feel real rather than this just this phony artifice. So, like, genuinely, I think there's been quite a bit of that lately, and it's odd for them, and I like to see it.
So we got Kofi and Xavier starting off against the Viking Raiders. Decent back and forth match between these guys, of course. Memorable moment. Kofi goes for a truss dive over the ropes and gets caught and just thrown into Woods by the Raiders as we go to the break. Later on, they've isolated Woods. Ivar managed to hit him with a splash, gets a near fall, and Kofi Kingston comes in, knocks out Eric with a Trouble in Paradise, and Woods rolls up. See a repeat of this quite a few times in tag team turmoil. Rolls up Eric for the pinfall victory. This was a decent little start, wasn't it, Sitch?
Yeah, I didn't hate this at all.
And then
I'll tell you what,
Jinder Mahal and Shaggy came along.
I'll tell you what, I didn't hate the finishes in this match at all. I thought the one against the Viking Raiders was particularly clever because Xavier Woods caught one of them off guard when his mate had just been decimated. That actually made sense as a roll-up. Someone had been caught off guard and hadn't been framed as a moron getting distracted in the process. He was obviously distracted. He was concerned about his mate. And it was so well-timed that I could buy it. Didn't hit the finish, nor any of the finishes. I thought one or two were actually crafted with a bit of elusive goddamn thought.
Because then we got Veer and Jinder Mahal, not Shanky. Shanky was just accompanying them to ringside, and they just pinned all straight. Yeah, good. I mean, I suppose they shouldn't really be in it. Certainly not after the Viking Raiders, because they literally beat them last week, Hamflet. But anything you want to say about this?
No, it's probably notable that Jinder's getting pinned, isn't it? Like, they've got more interest in Shanky and Veer at this point.
Brilliant.
That they realise that Jinder's not a big enough star. Not like giving them any rub, is he? So they might as well, like, pin him and then let them crack on trying to push this team.
Oh, good. Anyway, Lucha House Party came next. Really enjoyable little match, this, because of how quick everyone can go. But once again, Woods rolls up Gran Metalik as Kingston holds down Lindsay Dorado. Something and nothing, this one, Sidge.
Yeah. I mean, you know, gentlemen's three action. And there you go. There's a take.
Well, it was all next about
Mace and Dreamball.
They, were hugely in control, battering Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston until Woods rolls up T-Bar as he goes for his finisher. They get the victory, and immediately Mace and T-Bar attack post-match, and it looks like New Day are just going to be laid out for whichever team comes next. The next team was Mansoor and Mustafa Ali. Mustafa Ali basically telling him, just let them get murdered and then we'll pick the bones. But Mansoor wants to be good, wants to help, dives in. He gets his head kicked in as well. So Mustafa Ali realizes he has to go in after him. He gets beat up. Kingston gets lawn darted into the steel steps. Woods gets posted. They're all laid out, basically. And then when we come back from the break, it's announced by Postman Pearson, particularly by Sonya Deville, that they're going to give these four guys time to recover. And tag team turmoil will roll on as Raw does, Michael Hamflet.
Why? I want to be generous about this. The lawn dart was a nice choice, wasn't it? For all the things that Kofi's dressed as tonight. Nice choice. Appreciate that. Cheap, man. Like, you can't, the one thing with these gauntlets, right, and they're not for everybody and they're not always been for me, but if you remember how much praise Seth Rollins got for going incredibly long back in that 2018
one. No one remembers that because it was sucky at the time.
Yeah, I didn't like it then, but a lot of people like admired what he did. The entire Kofi Mania build seemed to be centered around long gauntlet matches. Regardless what you think of the matches in between, it's got to be one long continuation. If you're going to tell a story of her baby faces or heels being spoilers, like whether it be getting disqualified and kind of like ruining things when the gutsy baby faces have worked their way through, or an unexpected surprise package, getting a couple of pinfalls and suddenly making everybody think for a second they might win it. The whole point of these things is that it's got to be one long continuous story. It's become beneficial to WWE to do these in the three-hour Raw era because it really fills the TV time. So it affords them like the opportunity to not have to do more quote-unquote creative things because they can just put long matches in. In this case, they wanted to have it all. And I just thought it was really, really cheap. You want to take up loads of time in your first hour. You still want to go back to it in the main event and then ask audiences to like buy that the New Day is still in the middle of this struggle or that this is a continuation when it wasn't. I didn't like this at all as a bit of an out for them. Didn't work for me.
It was so cheap, as you said. That is the perfect word. Just creative bankruptcy. How do you follow the pay-per-view of the year, the conversation, the landmark moment for the competitor, which is actually not too far away from your demos? If you're thinking, and you're in WWE, you're thinking, Christ, the next round of TV rights negotiations are going to be incredibly interesting. If AEW catch up on their demos, AEW could get money out of the ass. Like they genuinely could. Because at the minute, to me at least, it feels like TNT are underpaying AEW. If you look at the market and how it's been established with WWE getting all of this money, I think AEW are getting underpaid. And if Long Bone Tone's got anything about him, he should point to the respective demos of each shows and think, look how much they're getting. Can we not have some of that? And if you're WWE, you're probably, you should be thinking, Christ, let's maintain this, guys. And you do two gauntlet matches on one show. It's pathetic. And again, it would be remiss of us, I guess, not to mention that this Mustafa Ali and Mansoor thing has been going on for some time. It informed the events of this match. That's not bad storytelling, but at the same time, it's just a storyline. My missus watches an ITV procedural in the UK, and it's called Vera, right? On a Sunday night. Tonight, she watches it on catch up on Monday.
Seen them filming that on the Quayside.
Yeah. And I'm not into Vera. Still, like, it's not for me. She's a homely, middle-aged detective woman,
mm-hmm.
and she's from up north, but she kind of talks like this, and she's got a scratch voice, and you know, when she gets the culprit at the end and she, you know, spots the gap in his alibi all the time, like, you didn't think about that one, Pat. And I'm watching Vera, and here's the thing, I'm not predisposed to enjoying Vera, but theoretically, when it's on in the background, that's on my phone, it's my turn tomorrow night, thank God, I could theoretically be drawn to Vera. Do you think, because it's a polished production that is made air, that is likely to have a baseline quality of being good, right, that I'm going to go, oh my God, Francis, are the storylines in this Vera? And she's going to look at me and go, well, it's a TV show. She's not Vera, she's Francis. But then, don't give them credit for rubbish, man.
That thing where like I might be in the living room and like peer over my laptop to ask my wife about like, huh, what's this EastEnders character up to lately? I suppose like he's murdered somebody and he's walking around like it's not a big deal, like a little bit of a sneer, and then go back to my laptop and check WWE's official Twitter account for what's happening tonight on Monday Night Raw. I've got my high horse.
That would be great then. Will the murderer be caught? Find out as Vera rolls on. right, we got Drew McIntyre, Sheamus. Oh, I haven't had that for ages. That came next. Number one contenders match to see who will face Damian Priest for the United States Championship at Extreme Rules. Look, we know these two can work brilliant matches together. We've seen enough of them. Again, they just went 15 minutes beating the crap out of each other because we often talk about how underrated Sheamus is. And Yeah, I think me and Ben Roy suggested maybe you have Drew win this to go to Extreme Rules, and then you potentially do more of that turn that we sort of saw after this match. But regardless, it is Sheamus heading to Extreme Rules. In the match itself, particularly that moment where Drew goes for the Glasgow kiss, but because Sheamus has got his face mask on, he hurts himself. And Sheamus just headbutts him back. Hits him with an Alabama slam, gets a two count off the back of that and attempts to mimic the Claymore countdown, but runs straight into a clothesline and a future shot DDT for a near fall for Drew. McIntyre actually tried to put him in a Kimura at one point, but Sheamus managed to get a rope break after being posted. And McIntyre gets hit with a huge knee strike as he comes off the top, and Sheamus gets in with the white noise as well for another two count. Eventually, McIntyre fights back, pulls Sheamus' mask off, exposing that pretty face of his. McIntyre goes for a claymore, but Sheamus dodges it. Schoolboy grabs the tights. He gets the victory, and an infuriated McIntyre post-match nails him with his own mask before giving him a claymore. We talked about this, as I said, me and Ben Roy on the preview yesterday. Is this more development of a heel turn for potentially for Drew McIntyre, or more of an edge at least? And we know he can't go after the title right now, the world title, with Lashley holding it. And what do you make of Sheamus heading to Extreme Rules?
I'm bored by that. Mm. I'm bored bloody rigid by that. I've seen it six times. There's no drama to it whatsoever. We know Priest is going over. It's somehow worse than a 50-50 feud this between Sheamus and Priest. It's just rotten. It's just absolutely rotten. The match quality itself, of course, was pretty damn good. These guys trust each other's bodies. They are committed to doing the work of the people who pay them by just belting each other, like assembling a really nice match that has no narrative purpose realistically. And it's just there to gobble up time. And you know what? They are professionals with a sense of self-respect. They still have this tunnel vision attitude where maybe it'll give them opportunities for titles if they batter each other. And I always like, I'm quite easily pleased, and that's what's the biggest indictment of the show. I genuinely am. I do like intricate, ambitious storytelling, yes, but I'm genuinely quite easily pleased. When big lads do the things that their smaller, athletically gifted peers do, I mark out. It's fun. It's incredulous. So when McIntyre did a top rope, then a roll through, and got bashed with a broad kick, yes, that looked awesome because it was Drew doing it. It was physically impressive and all the rest of it. But like, they better be turning Drew McIntyre heel, because what a knob he looked like in the post-match. What a knob. Like, yes, he was cheated, so he's going to be the big WWE badass babyface and get vengeance for cheating. If you're that pissed off, maybe don't do your 3-2-1 countdown. Looked like a sore loser. That's what he looked like. It's all about my babyfaces. Be losers and sore losers at that.
I really wish WWE could book, and not just because it'd make watching these shows like a lot easier, because I like this Drew McIntyre storyline at present, but I have so little faith for much of it to matter, let's say in 6 months. Like, that's not a huge ask, that whatever is happening right now with Drew McIntyre's life will matter again in 6 months. They've done a good job of, like, he is... It's like you could believe that he's starting to feel like, hang on, the deck's a bit stacked against me here, and this isn't fair. And that's like the great foundation for a heel turn. Like, he's lost this match, but he was cheated effectively in this match with Bobby Lashley, where he can't get another title shot. He's been cheated again here. He was basically, you know, that episode of Alan Partridge was like, I'm at a loose endling. You know, he drives to the petrol station to buy some windscreen washer fluid. Never going to use it. Never going to. That was him with, with his sword at SummerSlam. Takes his sword. Never going to use it, Lynn. Never going to use it. Like, he's got nothing going on, and he's kind of, it's not necessarily really his fault, but a lot of things have gradually conspired against him to drive this heel turn. And then he thinks, well, hang on, I've never been the United States champion, and this would make me a Grand Slam champion. Motivation, you know? So it's like, this is how I'm going to find my center again. And who's the US champion? An in-form, really well-liked, well-booked babyface in Damian Priest. So you've got these two cool things coming together. Drew McIntyre sort of getting pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed, but believing he's right to feel pushed. Damian Priest, this guy that we like, that it feels like you're allowed to have a bit of faith in. And they're going to come together, and like, I really like all that, but you just don't think that they're going to remember any of this, or Drew will get, I don't know, drafted, and then Survivor Series will be about like him wearing a blue t-shirt instead of a red one, or whatever. you know, and then Bobby Lashley will lose the belt again. So they'll just be like, all right, great, get him back in the title picture as soon as possible because he's one of our made men. Like, I wish that the ramifications that are pretty good right now will be relevant in November because I don't have the faith that they will be. I like this current Drew run in and of itself, but I just, it's all feels very short term.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Continuing on from this, we go backstage and Kevin Patrick's there at Damien Priest. Oh, Damien, what are you watching? He's been watching the match. They showed him looking awkwardly at TV earlier and he said he loved watching that fight between McIntyre and Sheamus and he was going to enjoy fighting Sheamus at Extreme Rules, and Sheamus in the end was going to hear and still United States champion Damien Priest. He looked very happy with himself. Good little promo this from Damien Priest. And then we get Sarah Schreiber chatting to Rhea Ripley and Nikki A.S.H., the latest in a long line of tag team odd couples. I think me and Ben really worked out yesterday, if they win the titles, they will be, I think it's 3/5 of the tag champs will be odd couples.
Fantastic.
So you've got Io Shirai and Zoe Stark in NXT. Obviously, you've got MSK there. They're an actual tag team. You've got the Usos. They're an actual tag team. And then you've got RK-Bro and, yes, Rhea Ripley and the superhero.
This is RK-Sis, isn't it? Because it's the exact same thing as RK-Bro, the same dynamic where Nikki A.S.H. is a goober. Rhea Ripley is a slightly more tolerant version of Randy Orton, but it's the same dynamic. Stupid little idiot is pals with the more serious one.
It's funny you say stupid little idiot. I wanted to mention something. I've been sitting on this for like a week and a half because this happened very early into the holiday.
You've been sitting on the ESH for a week and a half.
I've been sitting on this revelation about
me. Some grass.
You're thinking about that. You need to touch some grass.
The kids were watching a film on a night because we were just trying to get them to sleep. Secret Life of Pets 2, right? I'm about to send you an image over, and anybody that's listening to this podcast, if you haven't seen Secret Life of Pets 2, and I wouldn't judge you for that, Google a character from Secret Life of Pets 2 called Snowball. This is coming over to you electronically now. This is a rabbit. Believes itself to be a superhero because it was given superhero pajamas. And that whole deal about Nikki Cross being like, I've just had this inspiration flash to me and I'm going to get it over the line and I want to pitch it to the company. She just nicked it from Secret Life of Pets 2. Like, 100%.
Oh my God. It is. If you haven't seen this, it is.
Bolted upright watching this generic.
What do rabbits eat?
Say again.
What do rabbits eat?
What? Carrots and grass.
Yeah. You think that he be touching grass for inspiration? See, she's just the same as Riddle.
I think she's been smoking some grass for inspiration, basically. Yeah, there was a really awkward crowbarred line in here where Shriver was like saying, what have you got in common? And so it went, let's not try to fly ahead of ourselves. And I nearly put my foot through the screen.
Well, you're not even superheroes, so you can't fly, so that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And she went, go on. I'll be Rhea Ripley. And she goes like, go on, do the new catchphrase. And then they were like, super brutality. And it was just
super brutality. I'm going to die. Oh. It's like the promo version of those horrendous mishmash themes.
Oh, yeah, and you just turn it down. And turn.
Yeah.
There you go. There's Asuka, and there's...
Super fatality! I can't do accents. I mean, honestly, I'm turning this off. Turn this off and not come in on a Tuesday if you do this to me again.
Then we got a backstage promo with Charlotte Flair. Again, who am I supporting in this championship match we got later? Nia Jax or Charlotte Flair? Both heels, both massive heels. Charlotte Flair talked about just because Nia Jax is not like most girls, that doesn't matter because Charlotte Flair is one of a kind and she's going to make something about the crown bollocks and make her kiss the floor she walked on. And I thought, so am I meant to cheer for you or the other one at this point? What was going on?
I don't care.
No, okay, fair enough. Well, then we got the, not the tag team championship match, the tag team contenders match. They just discovered this in the last few months, haven't they?
Yeah, they've gone hard on for this.
Because it doesn't really mean anything. Because sometimes it means you win this, you'll get a title shot. And sometimes it means, we'll see if you're good enough for a title shot. I've won. Well, we'll think about it. We'll bear that in mind. It doesn't mean anything, these tag team contenders, you know, championship contenders matches.
Knox and Shotzi deserve three.
Yes.
I was just thinking that. They've won three, haven't they? And that was was back in May or something.
July. Because it was when they returned to arenas and thought, we need some hot new stars. Let's not put them on the shoe, Paul. Let's not put them on the shoe after that.
Yes, it was Natalya and Tamina versus Ripley and ASH. They isolate Nikki. Basically, Tamina super kicks Ripley to allow them to just work over Nikki Cross. Eventually, Ripley, of course, the real star of the team, comes in, gets the hot tag, runs wild. Busying herself trying to take out both members of the team, which means that as she drop kicks Tamina, that allows Natalya to sneak in and hit her with a German suplex. But then it's Nikki and Natalya. It looks like Natalya's got the match won. She's going for the sharpshooter. She actually puts it on well for once. And Rhea Ripley has blind tagged herself in. I mean, come on. Come on. It's your thing. What's your thing? Oh, make people think Bret Hart's about to come out. And then... Anyway, Rhea Ripley blind tags in, hits her with the Riptide. 1, 2, 3. They are number one contenders, I think.
Probably. I just love how Wilborn is way, way more diplomatic than either me or Hamflid. I'm not saying it's a political thing. Maybe he's just more easily pleased than us. I'm not saying he's cynical or anything like that. But this is hanging against Natalya. Rubbish. That's a boring, bloody waste of time.
I can't get over it. What do you think, anyway, Ham?
She's been in it for about a decade.
Yeah, exactly.
A boot? Canadian? Law of the Canadian? I don't know, man. My brain gets turned to mush by this idiotic TV program. So I'm talking about Vera and trying to pop like 10 people who've seen Vera on the podcast.
Venn diagram. Raw watchers. Podcast listeners. Vera. Oh, there it is. There's it.
I don't think you were where you said you were, but...
They don't get along, do they? So, they've just beaten the... They're not friends. They can't coexist, and yet they coexist better than the champions. You can't invest in this. That's not like me speaking emotionally. I'm literally speaking to any shareholders that listen. You can't invest in this anymore. Stop investing in this.
Right, time for this week's Moist TV. I got so excited when I saw the little, you know, the little thing in the corner that was like, coming up, Moist TV with Karrion Kross. I was like, yes, please.
That's the promo with the mask on.
Yeah. And then he's in there in a just, you know, nice black suit or whatever. Yeah. John Morrison's doing Moist TV. He's got Karrion Kross there. And he's like, me with Karrion Kross. Karrion. I loved it. It was like, you know, Lorraine or something. Tell us about what you're interested in. And he goes, I want everyone's worst dreams to become a reality. Cool. So he's being like, metaphorically, no, I want to ruin everything for everyone. Oh, cool. He says, what's next? And he goes, I'm going to make you suffer. And he goes, well, there's music playing in the background, by the way. That stops. And he goes, oh, yeah, but you know, you're talking like in theory. And he's like, no, I'm going to eliminate you.
Can I just interrupt 1 second? I know you're mid-spiel, and I love your dramatic readings, but I'm actually sat physically next to Adam Wilson right now. And in his notes, it's so funny, because Morrison didn't think Cross was serious. Have you watched NXT? If there's one adjective you would use to describe Karrion Kross, it's serious. But midway through that joke, I'm thinking, of course he hasn't watched NXT. Nobody else does.
I did like the line. I didn't like the line. I just was excited to hear your two's reaction, which I'll get to in a second. Morrison going, I'm not afraid of you. I've been in the ring with Kane, Undertaker, DX, the cool members. Oh, you. I used to like you, John. What's this? And Cross said, I'm going to teach you a lesson. I'm going to teach you to fall and pray. And then he did in 2 minutes. He battered him. Morrison, who's had presumably from the time this interview aired to the match to prepare, went, squirm in the face with water. That'll do it. That'll stop him. That'll stop this killer. He comes out in that stupid outfit. No one cares. He gets sprayed in the face with his drip stick. And Cross just hoys him all over the place. There was a nice spot where he suplexed him over the turnbuckle, over the ring ropes, over the turnbuckle to the outside. And then he gets there. Fresh Cross jacket on John Morrison for the submission victory. Hamflet, what do you think of this and all the bollocks that came before it?
Morrison referencing Kane made clear who Karrion Kross is at this point, but like it's not going to land. They want him to be thought of as a Kane-like figure. It's not going to happen. He's going to be a Gene Snitsky-like figure where he's going to get a few squashes for 3 weeks because they remembered that he's not a complete waste man or whatever, you know? Like, just bang average big guy doing boring squashes and they're going to tire him. Like, you're going to get two or three weeks. Ball, right? He's boring. Cedric sent me the message, Hamflet, I'm sorry. I know you're on holiday and you're switching off. Please look at this. And I couldn't be happier that he sent it. It was Karrion Kross in his mask.
You missed this.
Like, yeah, what I love about that as well is that, like, since then, obviously, I'm basing off this. You know, he's not going to lose many matches now. This is going to be his run. Like, everything we saw before was this false start when he had, like, Triple H's NXT belt around his waist, which is great as well. Just another dig from Vince. I don't count. This is what's happening now, as if that this is somehow better. Yeah, ignore that first bit. We've got it right. This is not like them fixing the Dark Order, is it? Like, forget about those phantom punches. We're good now. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, for them to think that this is the real quiz with Karrion Kross, Christ, they're miles off. They're absolutely miles off.
Two things before we move on. One, I know why, because it was funny spite. But if you've got Jeff Hardy in the 24/7 division on the exact same show, is Karrion Kross is racking up wins at this point. Don't do the first thing. This is never getting over. He's too bland. He's too generic. Brock Lesnar, during his 2002 monster push, would never get squirted with a water gun, even if it would make him mad. It just wouldn't happen. Like, it just frames him as an idiot. And here's the thing, right? I was looking at my coverage, and even I'm getting uninspired writing about WWE. Because there are, funnily enough, no more words to describe how like careless and casual and just it is what it is, and I don't care about what it could be. And I'm thinking, Christ, I should probably try and find the positives. Yeah, I'm a glass half full guy. So I'd stumbled upon something, right? Where if you look at the reactions that Riddle's been getting as part of RK Bro, and if you look at the reactions that John Morrison got at Money in the Bank. And live crowds are into John Morrison. And I had an epiphany thinking, have they had an epiphany after years of trying to project cool, The Rock-esque qualities on its baby faces who don't possess them naturally, like Seth Rollins and Randy Orton? Have they finally figured out, right, let's just do what we've been doing accidentally, deliberately, and make our baby faces geeks? It's what we're good at. It's the only thing we're good at is making our baby faces look like geeks. If we can do this to the point where they are sympathetic and not uncool as a result, is this the way forward to baby faces? Like, John Morrison was like really quite, not funny, but like I did half pop his oblivious deadpans at The Miz when they were together. Like, oh no, that wasn't true. And people like identified with him because he was a bit of an oblivious, well-meaning idiot, as is Riddle. And I'm thinking, are they going to be able to push these guys as a result? And I write this article. It's facetious as all hell, but there's a kernel of insight into it. And then beat them in 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's just As Andy put it right this morning, I just loaded up Twitter and he's like, someone's right, John Morrison push then, eh? Yeah. Ridiculous. Right, Nia Jax gets interviewed. She talks about physically overpowering and pinning, obviously, the Raw Women's Champion. And she said she was finishing what she started to win the title. She lost. That came next. I don't know what's going on here. Shayna Baszler's still her mate, sort of. But the match, the bell rings. Shayna Baszler jumps up on the apron and goes, I'm not sure you've got to take what it takes to beat Charlotte twice in a row. I think you might choke. And then Nia Jax just looked at her. And then they basically, I'm not sure if you saw this last week, basically their match descended into a shoot fight, Hamflet, with them just slapping the piss out of each other. That's what they tried to sort of copy here. They're shoving each other, they're grabbing their hair. Charlotte goes out, I'm not having this, gets out of the ring, gets the title, presumably goes to leave. And then Baszler, who just said, nah, Nia Jax is crap, she won't beat you. He's going, don't leave. Stay and beat her at least. That allows Nia Jax to get her, and they go back and forth. And Charlotte hits a powerbomb on Nia Jax for a near fall. Come back after the ads, and Charlotte's hitting her, you know, spectacular moonsault off the top to the outside. As she stood there celebrating, Baszler tries to attack her in full view of the referee, but Charlotte gets out of the way. But thankfully, Baszler stops herself before she hits Jax, which means she's more effective now trying to ruin Jax's match with her mind games than she was an effective tag team partner when they were the tag champions. And then they get back in the ring. Baszler jumps up on the apron. Nia Jax gets distracted and Charlotte comes off the top rope to hit a natural selection and pins her, and Baszler looks happy. Sid, your face was a picture as I was talking through that. What do you think of it all?
Vince McMahon is senile. There are dark Twitter rumours that it's the case. You don't need him. You just have to watch the telly. You beat your champion for this.
Mm-hmm.
You beat your champion last week for this. Could Nia Jax, and you know, the answer to this question is yes, because this happens most times when she wrestles, but could Nia Jax look like more a complete moron here? Could the quote-unquote character development have literally been any more obvious and blunt? And they are trying to tell the audience a story so sternly with such little respect for their ability to pick up on things that they shout the story to you via the conduit that is Shayna Baszler. The fact that Shayna Baszler is doing all these things makes Nia Jax look like the biggest moron imaginable. I just want it to be called What Culture AEW with a bit of New Japan and Forbidden Door action sprinkled in there as well.
.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last week degenerated into a shoot brawl made for this disastrous match, obviously. That was better than the completely worked and on the level one. Like, that was more enjoyable watch because at least there was something intriguing to look at for a minute. You know, that was all. Like, this was, went weird, it went strange. This was right back within WWE's wheelhouse. Mostly boring when it wasn't completely illogical and daft. I hate Baszler and Nia Jax's relationship as much as they do, and yet they persist. And yeah, was this a 2-week program to get Charlotte ready for the big pay-per-view singles match? Is that why this existed? Is it go 50-50 with Nia Jax because we've got something bigger for you at the pay-per-view?
Well, Bliss disappeared for a bit as well, I think, didn't she? So it's like, to keep her busy, we'll just give her this. Anyway, post-match, we sort of get back into it, as you alluded to there, Hamflet. Alexa Bliss appears on the screen. She's not alone, though. She's got with her. And I love this, by the way, because, you know, do you remember, like, I'm not, what about the Attitude Era? Do you remember the classic one with Shawn Michaels, and he's there and they've got the security guards in the ring? And I think, is it Shane, isn't it? He's doing a back and forth with him. He's like, Capice Commish, I got this. And then he's like, oh, who's that behind you there with that nightstick? Has he got a nightstick in his pants? We've got a big old cat, basically. And it's not Shawn Michaels, and that's a pre-tape. They go for this here, but Charlotte buggers this up, if you notice. So basically, Alexa goes, spooky bollocks, do you want to come and join me at Playground? Right? And she goes, She goes, Charlotte goes, I'm not interested in your mind games. But she talks for too long before she gets to, I'm not coming there. Alexa goes, well, that's a shame. I was like, she hasn't said it yet.
Why did they need a pre-tape when it took Alexa Bliss an extremely long amount of time to get to the ring? It wasn't like, oh my God, she's materialized out of thin air. It's like she just walks slowly to the ring in the dark. Supernatural.
WWE, she materialized out of thick air.
I mean, I did like the line where Bliss, because Charlotte refuses, Bliss says, well, Lily's got a lot of pent-up energy tonight. Do you know what it's like being stuck with a lunatic? Of course you do. You're a flair. I mean, that was a good line. I'll give you that. Right. She said, though, if you won't come to the playground, I'll bring the playground to you again. As Sidge there said there, the lights go out. Time. A few moments later, Alexa Bliss is stood in the ring with Lily. And Charlotte's like, what do you want? And she goes, points at the belt. And Charlotte says, oh, you want a title match? Everyone says, yeah. She says, okay, but not here, but Extreme Rules. We got there in the end, Asage.
Have they announced any stips for Extreme Rules?
Matches, they just got matches now. Then next week, someone's going to accidentally use a chair or a ladder or a table or some bollocks. Oh, I hope it's a tables match.
Wilborn, I'm starving.
Like, based on last year's horror show, every match is a swamp fight because this company's a swamp. Maybe that's the...
I'd love to see more of that. It's really funny in retrospect. It sucked because, you know, I hadn't been outside my house in about 3 months, but it was really funny.
Yeah.
Like, new eye for an eye. Charlotte just looks in the mirror at, like, one of her eyes goes, I don't need you anymore.
By really funny, I mean, the Money in the Bank one where they tried to be funny wasn't funny, but the horror ones were funny.
Yeah. And just used generic footage of an alligator or whatever it was. You're like, oh, that could be here. It's not, but could be. Time for a recap of all the times Reginald went to the park and formed life experiences or something. And then he's got a match against Akira Tozawa for the 24/7 championship.
Skip?
Well, can we skip the rest of the show? I'm really hungry.
No, because we've got a really good line to come. So we'll save that. But yeah, he pinned him. Use the flipping senton and then dodge to the outside, because then, of course, 24/7 rules became back in effect. They stopped for the match, but they come back in effect. And Cedric is there, Alberto Carrillo's there, R-Truth's there.
24/7!
Jackson Riker's there.
Shawn Benjamin. It's a
23/7, is it? Jackson Riker's there. Shawn Benjamin's there, as is Jeff Hardy. Okay, he dives onto all of them.
Skip.
They run to the back. And Drake Maverick's there. I mean, I say Skip, I've just covered all the things that happened there. Drake Maverick's there, so maybe Drake Maverick's getting back involved with this. So anyway, enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The 5-star review review.
Nailed it! And this week's 5-star review review is brought to you by... Wait a second, there we go. Jake Messinetti. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review, all you need to do is subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review and just suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, basically. Jake, though, says he hasn't got any Apple products in the house, so he's emailed me, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com, to suggest this 5-star review. He says, I'm sorry, this would be straight into the 7-star section of iTunes reviews if I had any Apple products, but alas, I'm a poor Android-wielding musician. Oh, wait a second. New York accent, mildly appropriate, but optional, so I'm going to go for it. Hey, I'm parting here. The What Culture Wrestling podcast is as well-rounded as, let me get back to you on that. Anchoring down the daily output is the prime time newsworthy voice of Adam Wilborn. Often joined by Andy H. Murray, the H stands for hilarious banter. For a roundup of the day's wrestling news. And by the Deadlies for previews and reviews of all your favorite shows and Raw. Bring in Nicholas, Celery, and Phil. I don't know if that's just a mistake call. That is deliberate. But...
Nicholas,
Celery, and Phil for some great fun on wrestle culture. Throw it over to the wonderful Gareth Morgan and Andrew Pollard to cover weekend news and reviews, and I'm set for my daily commute. Hey, I'm walking in. For a 5-star review, please take a look at the Big Show Body Slam Challenge from Duffin Up. That's it. They're as well-rounded as Paul White's big, bald, dumbass yet.
Everyone, you're all wonderful. New York points on me. Thank you. Bless you all for the great content. And I'm still 100% in for the Stylophone collaboration. Yeah, Jake's done a really good wrestle culture theme on the. I think I played it before on here on his Stylophone. We'll maybe do an entire quiz all about wrestling themes with that anyway. Oh. But Hanfler, take us back to the $1 million Tough Enough Challenge.
I love the $1 million Tough Enough Challenge because it took place in around 2004-ish on SmackDown, no less. Me and Sidgwick have had long conversations about this. To this day, I am so scared of the SmackDown locker room that I'm scared to even talk about them on a podcast in case one of them comes to me. Well, two of them can't, but like in case any of the rest of them come to me because they're so absolutely terrifying. If you were a new guy that dared to want to wrestle for a living, these giant men were going to make you suffer for choosing to do that. Big Show, of course, we've got here. Brock Lesnar, Harker Holly, Benoit and Guerrero. Just angry. Kurt Angle. Angry men that were angry with you for daring to come up and stand next to them or consider yourself in their league. And every week, the WWE, in all their cruel brilliance, instructed, like forced 10 people to do it. You want this? You want this? Go and bury yourself with that entire locker room. Once a week, this happened. Very much a precursor to the audition era of NXT, but way crueler because the men that this was affecting were just much crueler. Like when, you know, what his chops was talking about his mustache. Like John Morrison. Eli Cottonwood, thank you. You know, like John Morrison on the stage isn't going to be like, when you get back through that curtain, I'm going to put your head in a locker and slam the door. Like, they're just like, oh, whatever, mate. Yeah, this is a mess. You're going to look at Daniel Bryan, like having fun with it, you know, and like them doing the, like, let's win the newlyweds game by just writing chicks in America on a card. like these men, the Big Show knows full well that these have been instructed, sent out there to die. And yet when he goes back to the stage, but he thought you're pretty clever going out there. And so, didn't you? Like they're just absolutely set up to suffer.
Didn't one of the lads already quit before this thing even started?
Yeah, a couple. You always had dropouts. I know, like, one of the... Because these were, like, as you could see, they were all, like, massive guys. A few of them have got those sort of names where you're like, oh, wait, you're going to be somebody. And then there was one of the weeks, I don't think it was this one, although it was a physical challenge, where before they went out to do this, whatever it was, this act of physicality, it might have been this one, they were made to just make themselves sick eating pasta. Like, literally minutes before going out there. It was just like, you've got to respect this business. Eat this bolognese. Like, just this. You want it to stick on air. Just...
Why are you thinking I'm gonna
but like JBL backstage probably bollocking them thinking that like the war was a real war. You're just like them skinny assholes from WCW coming in think that we won that goddamn war coming and taking our job.
So
oh, by the way, in your absence we've totally South Parked this business. Neither took a job. We've now South Park.
I told Sidgwick, by the way, one, somebody on Twitter like reached out and said, you've got to listen to last week's 5-star review of you. There's like a back and forth that Wilborn and Sidgwick do from the comments section.
Oh, yeah.
But everywhere, right? I appreciated you picking a week for me being off so I don't have to talk about Charvo. I was in the fucking building, mate. I was there. Like, WWE would get like the cosmic joke is always at my expense. I could miss a podcast about it. But I saw it in the flesh.
It was so funny as well, because it was like, Ricky Hatton, and you're like, mate, yeah, obviously they're in Manchester. I was like, they're in Sheffield, so brilliant.
Great to be back in Sheffield.
In fact, I was not born here, though. I don't know what's going on. I'm really hungry.
It's all right, yeah. Presumably they've shown a clip backstage of the Big Show intimidating them on camera for once. Prior to this, Al Snow's in the ring and he says, well, Big Show, just put all of you in your place. Now you've got a chance to put Big Show in his place. You're going to get 20 seconds on the mic. Chris Naroki starts us off. He says, hey, Big Show, I'd like to tell you something. We might be the new boys on the block, Big Show, but you just give us a few weeks and when I win this $1 million Tough Enough competition, I'll be right beside you in that locker room and you will never be putting me in my place again.
Brother, it was not as easy as that.
Yeah.
You were going to get your asshole soaked up. Hazed, brother. You don't sign a contract and get like to be able to sit next to these guys. Like, yeah. They're going to kill you.
For the next reading, my good friend Michael Sidgwick, who should be seated here, will be playing the role of Taz. So Mike Mizanin, who you may recognize, gets on the mic and says, "This is the true story of when the Miz came to Hogan."
Nebraska.
he says, "Big Show, you're 7 foot tall, you're 500 pounds, you're the biggest guy on SmackDown. I've never wrestled before, but with the training of Mr. Also." Then Ryan Reeves, he looks familiar as well. He says, "Feed me more." No, he says, "Big Show, my name is Silverback Ryan Reeves, and I am the real vanilla gorilla. I will bring the pain more than anybody. If you had this opportunity, you'd have taken it too. So don't hate on us for taking advantage of it. You don't scare me or any of these guys."
Buzz.
Please. I can't remember. How does he say?
Well, it's like the Fashanu, John Fashanu there. Because Al Snow calls him Dan Rodimer and he calls himself Dan Rodimer. And he himself can't work out whether he's from Texas or wherever he's actually from. So maybe we'll just interchange it as a meta gag.
Dan, nuts.
He does a big show.
Like, big shoe.
Big shoe. And then some talk some bollocks about it. Big Show picking on one of the littler guys and he's big and he's not going anywhere. I couldn't care less at this point. At this point, Nick Mitchell comes in. He goes, "Big Show, you're the Big Show." Well, you've nailed it so far, Nick. He says, "I'm big time. You want big time? Can you do this?" And he dances around the ring. And then, you know, the bit where they gave the Oosi hot cream to FTR? Yeah, that. Rubbing his ass on the ring like a dog with worms. He says, "I don't think so. You're too big for that." And no, they stacked crap that high. So he's just stolen someone else's line. And Michael Cole even's going, "What's this got to do with wrestling?" on commentary. Justice Smith goes, "Hey, Big Show, come out to play, yay!" Brilliant, just steal an infamous movie line, that's fine. And then he just says the same thing as that Dan Ladd about him going after small guys. And then Daniel Puder, who I believe goes on to win the whole thing, says, because the Big Show shoved him earlier, he says, "Big Show, you think that hurt? I got three words for you. Snap, crackle, and huge bap. When I get done with you, your arms and legs are going to be broken. All of them." "That's what I do. I'm an ultimate fighter." And then says some other bollocks and no one cares. Your review of these promos, Sidge?
Not so good. Not so good. Pewter has some good, intense jock energy. The Miz knows where the bread's buttered in WWE, so he just decides to do a catchphrase.
Yeah.
The rest of them absolutely suck.
The sincerity in Al Snow's voice, as he says, "You did a really good job there talking smack to Big Show." Oh, spot on work. And he says, "Now they can tell him to his face." And the best Big Show theme plays. I love that. "Well," and the Big Show comes out, all the big pyro. He gets in the ring. He confronts Dan Rodimer, tells him to tell everyone why he's so tough, puts the mic in his face, goes to slap him, and Dan dodges it. Fair play. That's a hell of a reaction. And then he says, "Go on, take a swing. Get a taste." And Cho reveals he's going to body slam them all. And Ryan Reeves steps up first, eats one, and can't move. An example of things to come, perhaps, with that man. Nick Mitchell steps up, the one who wiped his ass on the ring, and he gets slapped so hard. And he gets body slammed then. Then comes Daniel Puder. He gets body slammed. Oh, my God. No wonder. What was his name? Chris Naroki. No wonder he didn't win this. He is... How would you describe the way he goes up? I described it as all arms and elbows.
I'd describe it as Adam Wilborn doing a gag.
Yeah. Wacky waving arms and flailing in front of a little tube man. Oh, my God. I'm genuinely surprised he didn't injure him. And also, you've sensed that quite a few of these lads are trying to sandbag Big Show. It's incredibly impressive that he just goes, "Over you go. See you later." Then Justice Smith. He gets slammed and Big Show's like, "Ah, bollocks, I'll elbow you as well." And it's either a brilliant acting job rolling around with his eyes in the back of his head, or Big Show's just really hurt him.
He just wants a job.
Yeah. And finally, it's Dan Rodimer's time. Big Show gets in his face, the jaw jacking, and then Big Show slams him and knees him. And Taz talks about 470-pound dose of reality. You must have loved this pamphlet.
Why? There was a point where Big Show, I think it was after the slam with the arms and legs fella, where he sort of looked at Al Snow and like, you training these? It feels uncomfortable at points watching ritualistic bullying in front of a camera.
Right. After this, we go to the comment section. Once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, the Dudley Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling. Shiv, 2 months ago, writes, these were great promos, to be fair. So.
Next.
Melts Man writes, lol, Rybotch looking like a normal human being before all that juice got him bald. Leo De Silva shares the fun fact that Dan Rodimer was running for the Republican Party in Nevada last year.
Yeah, it was Texas after that, wasn't it?
Yeah, he moved everywhere. He lost every single
And list. I'm Dan Rodimer! And I'm Rebellion!
I like it. You know, there's always those people in the comment section. He's like, I'll tell you what you should have done here. Brilliant. Yeah, you sit behind that keyboard too. Sean Bang writes, I bet it was super nerve-wracking to have to speak in front of that giant crowd, completely improvised. But I'd have taken the talk and talking as much as possible. Maybe get borderline offensive to get a crowd reaction.
Brothers go for the cheap heat. I'm not being funny, you could probably get a job somewhere.
Yeah.
That's his instinct.
Ghetto Society writes, Al Snow looks like he came to steal somebody's auntie from the family reunion. Also, really childish, this next one.
What does everybody want?
Yeah. Justin Woodson. I'm going to read this. Obviously, just the, you know, clerical error. Last dude should have gotten cock slammed, lol. He reads jokes, though, but he's excited. the best one, the final comment here, comes from Jay Victor, who sort of reflects, you know, like we alluded to, the fact that some guys went on to do great things. Daniel Pewter's apparently worth loads of money now. Obviously, Ryback, apparently someone said in the comments, I'm not going to bother to check. Ryback's doing stuff. And, The Miz is The Miz, which is personified by here by Jay Victor, who writes, can't believe The Miz went on to Main Event Mania and Port Maurice. So there you go.
Hey, I'm balking here.
So thanks to Jake Mezzanetti for this week's 5-star review. If you want to suggest something like that, something short, crap, wrestling related, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review suggesting something short, crap, and wrestling related. Or you can email me, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com, if you are unable to get on to the iTunes store. Right, where are we? What have we got left to do? Oh, right, it's nearly main event time. Just before that, though, there's a promo from Doudrap. She's backstage with Kevin Patrick. And she says, Eva Marie got out. Doudrap last week. Remember when she, you didn't see this, pamphlet, but they finally broke up, obviously. And what happened last week was we were promised a match between the two of them, which Doudrop attacked her before the bell, incapacitated her. She was unable to compete, and then she just audibly declared herself the winner. Babyface Doudrop there.
She could have actually done the exact same thing and won a match, and what would that have counted for? Mm. Nothing. Why am I watching the show?
Anyway, the reason why I wanted to say this was she's cutting a promo. She says she wants a rematch. You're the one reason it cost yourself the minute. Anyway, she says, Evolution. My Eva delusion. Oh, nailed it. Get in. You're main event worthy. and she says she's ushering a new era, the Doudrop illusion.
Come on, baby. God, I wanted to die.
Right, back to Tag Team Turmoil.
All at once.
Okay.
No individual match recaps.
Okay, Kofi and Xavier versus Mustafa Ali and Mansoor. At one point, Woods is getting checked over. The referee's backing off Mansoor. Mustafa Ali is going, no, kill him. So Ali tags himself in. beats him down, goes for the 450 on Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston moves, trouble in paradise, and Woods hits that mint springboard elbow drop that he does when he walks along the ropes. One, two, three. They advance to take on the penultimate team of AJ Styles and Big George. I just love the spot where Kofi Kingston springs in and almost just sees him coming and just slaps him out of the air. Styles goes for that backflip DDT, reverse DDT thing that he usually hits. But Kingston managed to reverse that into a trouble in paradise. Almost comes in to break it all up, though. Woods goes after him. He just chucks him out of the ring. And he basically batters Kofi Kingston. Styles hits the Styles Clash. One, two, three. The final match, AJ Styles and Omos versus the WWE champion, Bobby Lashley and MVP. MVP gets a huge reaction. So quite rightly, immediately tags out and brings in Bobby Lashley. And what a reaction for Omos and Bobby Lashley having a stare down in the ring. And they have a grappling match. And Lashley actually tries to vertical suplex Omos, but he stops it, reverses it, nails Lashley. Lashley gets out of the ring off the back of that, confronts Orton, who's watching ringside with Riddle. And as they're having a back and forth there, in comes Styles out of nowhere, running crossbody off the announce table onto both of them, and almost gets involved throwing Riddle into the barricade. Styles sets up for the phenomenal forearm, goes for it, but Lashley ducks out of the way, hits the ropes, hits a spear, gets the victory. It is going to be Bobby Lashley and MVP versus RK-Bro for the tag titles next week. Post-match, in comes almost. He's not happy. He tree slams Bobby Lashley. He and Styles get out there, and as Lashley's getting to his feet, Randy Orton slithers in to hit an RKO, and the tank champs stand tall as the show goes off the air. Quite the reaction to Omos and Bobby Lashley, but yeah, it is going to be the WWE champion and his manager effectively versus the tag champs next week.
Yeah, I would describe that as a suboptimal booking move because quite clearly, even though he's as green as a tropical tree frog, as Fit Finley once said on WCW television, people are banging to Omos. Of course, these WWE fans of our age are going to love the visual of two behemoths coming together in the ring. People want that as opposed to that. And I'm pointing at the match graphic between Bobby Lashley and Randy Orton. So this is when the sort of, I'm not going to use the second D word. This is when, if you cross your streams between storytelling, you arrive at potentially a match that people would rather want to see. So, a bit stupid, this. And the matches were, yeah, the New Day that fought bravely, but for too long. So they, you know, lost. Of course they did. Good hour of my life, that. What a good hour of my life that was.
An hour and a half.
Frittered away on Raw.
Had a break. Had a good hour and a half to rest. Like, my sympathy was gone because they had a break.
Yes.
It should have been so much more effective if they just had the guts and the creative nous to be able to put this in the show as one big thing. Because the arse at the end was, you know, like one of the, away from all the very detailed praise towards All Out at the weekend, one of the most simplest was, well, sometimes you just absolutely have to give the people what they want. And the people told WWE they wanted some of Lashley and Omos tonight, and you got a little bit of it, and it was great. And I think there's probably more of it to come, and it's no bad thing. Yeah. Like, everything I liked about the very, very end of this was basically what I liked at the beginning, which was the crossing over of RK-Bro into the title picture, the acknowledgement seemingly that this is what people want to see from Lashley as WWE champion. Not awful. Really, really not awful, but the matches weren't out to write home about because splitting it up killed the drama.
An instantly forgettable episode of Monday Night Raw.
Oh, God, I can't believe we spent this much time talking about it. It's 3 hours. You have to... Hamlet? I've already given you my takes throughout the podcast, so let's just follow us on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE.
Yeah, I want Cedric to get his lunch. I feel nothing but... I feel more sympathy for you than I did the New Day in the second half of the gauntlet.
Right, well,
You haven't taken a break. Like, you deserve this.
Let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hanford at...
Michael Hanford.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes as well. Watch you there for daily wrestling podcasts. Our NXT preview coming later on today, as well as, of course, all the usual good stuff later on this week. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.